Hello, everybody, and you are very welcome to the Young Stock Podcast, a podcast by young journalists for young readers and listeners from the Irish Farmers Journal. My name is Peter Thomas Keaveney. I'm joined now with Conor Trimble. Conor is a County Down man and he works for Class UK. For anyone maybe who's not aware, Class UK are the distributor of all class products, such as tractors, combines, forage harvesters, and all grassland equipment for the Irish and the UK markets. We are currently recording this podcast at Class UK headquarters, which is based in Saxham in the southeast of England. This week's podcast is brought to you in association with LightSource BP.
Are you eager to unlock untapped potential and create more income from your land? Have you been exploring ways of diversifying your farming business? Do you want to become a key player in the solution to the climate crisis? Why not consider leasing your land for solar with LightSource BP? A solar lease offers Irish farmers a predictable long-term revenue stream, index-linked to keep up with inflation, and the best part is that you'll still be able to use the land for farming if you want to. LightSource BP has a long history of developing solar in Ireland. We've been on the island for a decade and have developed hundreds of megawatts of renewable energy projects. Speak to our local teams to find out how a LightSource BP solar lease could benefit your farming business today by visiting www.lightsourcebp.com/IE and clicking partner with us.
So I started off by asking Conor to tell us a little bit about himself and where he grew up.
My name's Conor Trimble. I am the product manager here at Class UK for foragers, balers and greenline products. So a little bit about myself. I originated from a small place called Annalong, County Down, Northern Ireland. Come from a small family farm over there. Moved over to England in the early sort of 2010 to try and sort of further things along as I was developing through my career.
You mentioned you're from a farm. What sort of farming background are you from?
A small beef and sheep farm just at the foot of the Mourne Mountains. So small time operation.
Good stuff. And where did the interest in machinery come from then, Conor?
The interest in machinery come from whenever I was very young. I'd always have been pulled towards tractors and equipment. I can remember from my younger days, whenever I started to walk, wanting to climb over a tractor and take things apart. Well, try and get them back together again.
That's always the challenge, Conor, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's easy to take it apart, a bit harder to get it back together again. At least a bit of head scratching.
Now you said it. Conor, where did you go to college then? And maybe what did you study? Or can you tell us about your route?
I started off at the very start wanting to stay close to home. So whenever I finished school, started a course doing a higher national diploma at Caffrey at the Greenmount campus. I'd done my first year there. Once I got that over me, I went to do my work placement section of that and basically ventured over to England to work on a couple of large arable farms. While I was over there, I got realization of what was out there and what opportunities were available. And I can remember the farm manager at the time, whenever I'd finished up, had said to me that there was great opportunities at Harbour Adams and potential place that would open doors for me. So that sort of stuck with me, and I transferred across from Caffrey across to Harbour Adams to go down an engineering route. So I basically finished out my degree in Harbour Adams doing agricultural engineering. And then once I got finished there, ventured on and sort of stayed this side of the water in the East England.
Tell me, how many years did you spend at Greenmount and then how long did you spend at Harper?
I spent 2 years at Greenmount and then I went on and done 2 years at Harbour Adams as well. I didn't have to start from scratch again at Harbour Adams. I basically was able to jump on mid-course and do what they call a top-up to bring me up from one course into the full degree level.
How did you find that transition, Conor? Was it a baptism of fire or how did you find it?
It was fairly green. Whenever I first came over to England, you know, I'd never really been away from home and didn't really realise there was much else other than being around home. And whenever I came over to Harbour Adams, it was a big culture shock. There was big demands put on. There was a lot of hard work required. There was good rewards from it. Definitely a culture shock from that side of things. And I suppose in the 2 years, there was a lot of time spent with my head at either a book or a computer, more than I thought there would have been.
Good stuff. And how would you rate that course in overall, Conor?
I would say that's a high-level course. I don't regret in the slightest doing what I've done because it helped me to grow up and become the person I've become today. But, you know, there's big opportunities out there for people. And if you can make that break away from home in the instance, there's massive opportunities with Harbour Adams. Like, they've got big ties within the industry and even from the straight agriculture side or the agriculture engineering side, they've got big ties to like big companies like Class as such. You know, you've got opportunities in there for placements that you can really get into it, get yourself some doors open from that side.
You're leading on to my next question. Did you find that there was many career opportunities out there once you finished the course?
Big opportunities. As I say, I probably didn't get the full benefit of that because I didn't start there from the very start. I would urge anybody to do that sandwich course and get out and spend that year in industry and meet people, and really does open doors, you know, that you can see, get a taste for what's out there, what you want to do, what you need to do. Yeah, I'd find it invaluable, and lots of opportunities coming out the other end.
When you had the course completed, where did you head for? Maybe can you tell us about the start of your career?
The start of my career, I probably went a bit unconventional. You know, I still had a bit of a bug for big farms over in England and wanted to do things and see things that, you know, you don't really see from a small beef and sheep farm at the foot of the Mourne Mountains. You know, I suppose my original goal whenever I left was I was going to go to New Zealand. It just, there was too many opportunities over here, and I never actually managed to make the break away. So whenever I left, I'd done a couple of harvests in between years in the summer, and I was quite lucky that I actually got offered a job on a big arable farm over here in the east of England that was managed by Velcourt. They basically took me in, and I was sort of the main combine and sprayer driver at that stage with the hope of potentially taking it further. It was a brilliant opportunity to see how that large scale business was actually running and what was different, how to actually see that they treat everything over here as a business. You know, there's a thought process behind it. I can remember many's a day where my boss at the time would have come in and said, right, I've a couple of tractors to change here. And, you know, he'd have been always sitting down, you know, what do you want? What do you think we need? You know, what is the right thing? He would have been very shrewd in the fact that he only ever had the machinery that he needed to have. He would have always been like the rest of us, with a bit of shiny metal disease, that he always wanted more, but he always had the reins on himself to pull himself back. So it was great to see that different side of things. It was a brilliant farm to be on because in the late 80s, it was a dairy farm in the east of England. There had been a lot of dairy farms over here at that time, and he was able to just see what was happening to the dairy industry over here. It's a warm climate over here. It can get very dry, and he had some real good quality land, stuff that if I had 100 acres of it at home, it would be stuff that dreams would be made of. And he seen that it was his time to cut his losses, and he basically switched over to the arable farm in the end. So it was good to see that how that diversification worked from that side of the business. So I basically spent 2 good years with them, built myself up there, and was getting involved with more and making more decisions. And at that stage, it sort of sunk into me what I actually wanted to do. I was seeing from a farm management side of things that I thought I was wanting to get involved in, and I realised that it wasn't actually the thing for me. It was a lot of office-based, and I liked being out and about. I liked getting hands-on with the machinery. And it was actually the sales manager here at Manza Saxon was out doing a demonstration one day, and he started speaking to me about machinery and about jobs. And the two of us got talking and sort of clicked. And he said, we've got opportunities. Would you like to make a start? It sort of sunk with me. And about a month later, it all sort of fell into place. So I basically wanted to start from the very beginning. So whenever I got offered a job as a sort of a service engineer. And at that time, with my arable background, Manz had just started to think about taking on a horse franchise.
Manz is the local Class dealer who's based on the same premises here, yeah, as Class UK.
Yeah, Manz and Class UK are sort of tied together as one but separate.
Okay.
So Class UK is obviously the main importer, but Manz of Saxham is the dealer, but it's also the founding dealer for the whole of Class UK. So it dates back to just after the war, whenever the Manz family and Jim Manz started bringing in Class Combine. It's, to me, it's a real prestigious dealer because it's where everything started from. It was them that got the ball rolling with the whole Class thing. Real good to sort of get into that. Started off there in the workshop, started sort of becoming a service engineer. Obviously, with my background from being a grass area at home, they realised that I started to know my way around a forager. I started looking after, with the help of another colleague, the foragers in the area, as well as all the tillage equipment as such. I started working on that, and it just sort of developed from there. So I'd done 3 years in the workshop and sort of got myself built up and sort of well known, and got approached 2018 by the Academy Training Manager. and basically wanted me to jump across into the training side of things.
Okay, and what did that involve then, Connor?
That was sort of the next big culture shock for me, and it was sort of the next steep learning curve. They basically wanted me to go from being a service engineer to actually training service engineers. My predecessor, Owen Dorn, who had been doing the job before me, he had basically decided that it was his time to move back home, and he took a job up with Leinster Farm Machines. So I sort of fell into his place, and big learning curve, big increase in knowledge. And I suppose the big thing was, you know, it's easy enough working on the machines. It's the hard bit is being able to transfer that knowledge across to a service engineer in a way that they understand. And that was, I had to get around. The other big thing is standing up in front of groups. Whenever you're a service engineer, it's okay. Whenever you've got 10 drivers standing looking at you and you're trying to get something fixed, but it's a different thing whenever you have to articulate yourself in front of everybody, get the good quality of information across. It was a brilliant opportunity. It allowed me to start spending time over at the factory and building my knowledge in the product and building my relationships up there with the people in the factory and just getting more in depth with the machine. The other big thing was it allowed me to focus on the area that I probably had the most passion and the most interest in and really, really build upon that. Like, it's, you know, I've only ever known grass machinery, and it's a bit where I've got the most passion. You know, I've spent time with tillage equipment and combines, but the real fire is the grassland side of things. It was a brilliant opportunity. It's sort of the last 6 years, it's been brilliant to learn and develop and build away through the company itself.
It sounds like, Connor, in the last few days, we've just heard that you've been appointed to a new role. So if I'm right in saying you're now the product manager for foragers, balers and green line equipment, can you tell us a little bit about the role and what your new responsibilities are going to be?
Another big change and big thing that I'm very thankful for is that Class UK and Class Group are basically giving me these opportunities to progress through the company. It's an invaluable. Now I have been appointed the product manager for foragers, balers and green line. So it's going to be a big change for me. So my previous history with the company has been with the after sales side of the business and very service orientated. Now, this last couple of years, I've dipped my toe into the water with a bit of product support and demonstration, but now I'm fully into the water now. So I'm going to be responsible for the promotion of the machine to, obviously, to customers, to salesmen. I'll also be involved with setting specs with the machine, getting things right for what our customers want and to try and help meet their needs as best as we can. And I will still have a training element involved in my job to basically make sure that we sustain a good level of knowledge with our salesmen in the dealer network as well. And I suppose the main thing will be a line of communication with the factory as well. So helping with potential future developments and basically feeding back what demands our customers have and try and meet as many of those as we possibly can.
Am I right in saying, Connor, that you'll be over the Irish and UK market now for foragers, balers and the green line?
Yeah. So I'm going to cover the whole of the UK and Ireland, and big market area for us. The island of Ireland might be small, but it's very mighty whenever it comes to the machinery side of things. A big focus area in the grassland side.
Connor, as I mentioned, we're recording this podcast here at Class UK headquarters. It's a really, really impressive facility. It's my first time here. Can you tell us maybe a little bit about what happens here? Maybe to those who are listening at home, can you give them a flavour of the scale of stuff as well here?
So we're here at Class UK. Class UK was originally built in probably the 1950s or 1960s. And we basically started a redevelopment project in 2017. So the first part of the redevelopment project was to build our new training academy to basically allow the site to be redeveloped. So it was done in stages. Today we are sitting in our Technopark 2 showroom, a lovely, nice, big, airy, glass-fronted building where customers are more than welcome to come in and have a good look around the machines and basically see everybody here at Class UK. So Class UK and Ireland are the main importer for our market. So we are involved in basically procuring the machines from the factory in Germany and providing those to the customers. The big focus in Class UK and Ireland is to look at the customer support side of things. So this whole building is aimed towards customer support. So we obviously have our sales team and a sales support and logistics based here. Above the room where we're sitting in now, we have our parts department and we have our technical services department. And then just to the next building across, very close, is then the training academy. So there's a big emphasis on having everybody close to each other. So if there is a problem with the customer's machine, it's all about how that problem is dealt with and getting it dealt with quickly. So if it's a sales problem, the salespeople can talk to the after sales people. If it's a technical problem, the technical support team can work with parts, and they can also work with the training academy to basically get a better understanding of how we can basically get problems fixed quicker. And that's the key goal for here, is supporting the customers. And that's a big statement that we want it. And, you know, we have a nice big showroom here with a big glass front, but I would say that the most important bit is actually behind us here in a glass warehouse. So we've now built a nice big warehouse here with upwards of £10 million worth of parts
right.
stored in there for the UK and the Irish market. And that was a big statement that they wanted to make after Brexit. You know, whenever customs controls and border controls were coming in for the UK, that instead of us falling foul of those, we wanted to try and store more parts here. And it's something that you'll see hopefully today whenever you're having a tour around. And it's something I'd urge everybody, if they have the chance, come across and actually see what we're about. We have a lot of pride in our brand name and our brand image, but I think that the big pride is the level of support in the background. You know, we want to work together with the customer, and we'll try and do as much as we possibly can to make sure that we're supporting them at all times.
Of course, Connor. And then you mentioned the parts there. So do parts and machines come from the factories in France and Germany through Class UK over to Ireland, or what is the route of travel for parts and machines?
So currently at the minute, as it stands with Brexit, I would say probably 90% to 95% of the machines into Ireland will come directly from the factory. Obviously, just staying within the Eurozone, it makes it a little bit easier and gets the machine to the customer as quick as we possibly can. There is a certain element that will still come into the UK and will go to Ireland that way, but that's a smaller percentage now. With the parts as well, if we are trying to do overnight parts or get parts there as quick as we possibly can, we will ship them directly from the warehouse locations in Europe to get them there as quick as we can. But obviously, if for stock and availability, if it's available in the UK and we can get it to Ireland quicker, we will get it across and we will get it to Ireland as quick as we possibly can from that side of things.
Connor, moving on to maybe the industry and the trends. What trends are you seeing at the minute in machinery sales? You know, are farmers and contractors, is it bigger kit, is it more technology, or what is the direction of travel?
I would say if you look at the size of kits, if you looked sort of 5-6 years ago from a forager point of view, our two main range of foragers are 800s and our 900s. Our main machine in the 800 series would have been a 530 horsepower 860. And if you were into the 900 series, it would have been a just shy of 600 horsepower 950. Would have been what we would have classed as our bread and butter machines. Now, over the last few years, with the changes in weather and the changes in conditions, we can actually see those machines are starting to get bigger. So now, instead of selling an 860, we'd probably be more likely to sell a 650 horsepower 880 now, which is becoming a very common model. The 950 has now increased in size now to being the most common would be a 970, bringing that up to just short of 800 horsepower. I suppose the big trend is that customers are having to do a lot more work in a lot shorter time with the weather conditions, so they're needing the power to get through. But as well as that, obviously the technology elements coming through there, you know, you've got things that will help increase output, like our CMOS auto performance system that helps optimize our machines. And we can then bring in our data collection in there with our quantimeter and NIR sensors as well, which are big areas of growth too.
Of course, Connor. And then how healthy would you call the current market, I suppose, both in Ireland and the UK? And what do you see the remainder of 2024 playing out like?
I would say that the market at the minute, I would say, is cautious. I think with the wet conditions that we had last year, and I suppose the wet conditions that we're facing at the start of this year, we have a lot of people being very cautious. And I'd probably say that the market's going to take a little bit of a dip compared to normal, just as a result of that. You know, whenever you're struggling to get work done, get crop in, get your grass cut, you know, you focus more on that than the machinery. So I'd say cautious is probably the best way of describing the market this year.
That opinion is being echoed around the industry at the minute. Connor, what is the biggest development in machinery that excites you? You're obviously big into your kit, big into your technology. What's exciting you at the minute?
The big thing that's exciting me at the minute is the automation and the digitalization of the machine. If we look at our machine as a whole and look at machines as a whole in general, we're very limited by the size of the box that we have. And, you know, we've spent a lot of times over the year optimizing that box. And I can see in the next coming years, the big things being development in digitalization, you know, your CMOS automatics, your NIR sensors, your data collections, and just further optimizing that machine on further. That's the big area of excitement for me at the minute, is seeing how that's going to develop and see how we can optimize our machines even more to get the most performance out of the customer's purchase as they possibly can.
Of course, and the biggest challenge is going to be collecting that data and collating it and get the farmer to get the most out of it, really, isn't it? Like,
that's the big thing, and that's where our Class Connect side of things that we're developing at the minute is going to bring that all in and bring that data collection and machine information all into one point to make that easier for the customer to actually access that data and do more with it going forward.
Of course. Connor, in terms of the order book, you know, how are lead times looking at the minute? Are they back on other years, maybe when demand is really high, or how is it?
Lead times at the minute, I would say, is probably getting back to normal times. And normal times, I mean, pre-COVID, whenever, you know, if we go back to like 2018, 2019. So machines are coming through plentiful and good times. Obviously, we're dealing with harvest products. The closer it gets to the harvesting window, the harder it gets to get those machines on time. So I suppose we see a big switch in the trend of people buying machines. You know, there's more thought process put into it now, and people are wanting to get things done earlier now to get things nailed down, get things fixed down. So lead time's good at the minute. As I say, just the getting closer to that harvest window and the last minute purchases, they're the hard ones to get them here on time from that side.
Of course. Connor, your role means you have a lot of insights, you know, more so than others. In your opinion, will the price of new machinery continue to rise, or is it going to come down in the near future, or what's the outlook on the pricing?
It's hard to say. You know, we've got a lot going on in the world at the minute, and, you know, the big thing that affects our pricing is our small components. Getting those small components at the minute is the biggest challenge that we have. Things like wiring looms, things like modules, you know, they're coming from countries where the main suppliers of those wiring looms are countries like Ukraine, which is having its own issues at the minute. You know, those demands and trying to get those components are the big things at the minute for us. The big thing for us is to try and keep the pricing as competitive as possible. We're always going to try and look at the market, see what's happening, and try and keep that price for the customer as competitive. And the main thing is affordability. You know, we have to keep our machines as affordable as possible, and to make sure that we're supporting our customers as much as we possibly can. Now, the big hope will be that things will settle and we'll get that consistency back again. But say the big thing for us is making sure that we're keeping things affordable.
Connor, long term, are you gonna stick it out in England, or?
I'd be lying if I said that I didn't want to go home, but the thing is, now I've got a bit of a bug, you know, I've got a bit of a bug for progression, and I suppose I've been very fortunate being introduced into the class world, and it is like a big family business that you work hard and there's opportunities open themselves up, and I'm sort of at the stage now where I've spent a long time over here and I want to see what more opportunities comes from it. You know, I'm just starting into a new role that I want to get my teeth into and really build upon, but I'd like to think in the future, you know, we could maybe do something different. You know, I spent most of my time in the UK and Ireland. Maybe I'd like to maybe try and go and do things a bit further afield. You know, it had always been a dream to get involved with a factory at some point. So that's my long-term goal, is to stick with it and see how it progresses within the class business and see how far I can get as such.
Good stuff, Connor. Yeah, no, I really hope that works out for you. Connor, finally, outside of work, what's your hobbies and interests?
So outside of work, I have a keen interest in motorsport. I'm a big follower of the Formula One, try to get to a race every so often just to stay in with that side of things. But I'm also into a bit of historic racing as well. So a bit of historic touring cars, historic rally, things like that. So myself and a few friends would attend a place down in the south coast of England called Goodwood. We go there maybe two or three times a year, basically seeing these lovely cars getting thrashed around a racetrack and being used what they're for. And I also have another pet project at the minute I'm working on, of my granddad's original Massey 135 that's going through a nut and bolt restoration at the moment. So that's taken up a lot of time as well. So whenever I'm not playing with foragers, it's either going watching cars getting thrashed or tinkering with my 135.
Good stuff. And if money wasn't an object, Connor, what historic car would you be buying? Ready for rallying or for motorsport?
If money wasn't an object now, I would love a genuine Mark One Lotus Cortina.
Yep.
Yeah. A big advocate for old Ford. It's always been a dream of mine to have one of those.
Good stuff, Connor. Connor, we want to wrap it up with a quick fire round. Is it a sprung or a fork?
Fork.
Lines or berries?
Berries.
Berries, good man. Breakfast roll or chicken roll?
Chicken roll.
Are you Bales or Pitman?
Pit.
Dunlop or Bikina?
Dunlop.
Are you a start or a dessert man?
Dessert.
A rotary or herringbone?
Herringbone.
And the plough or a mintel man?
Plough.
Would you rather pick stones or foot turf?
Pick stones.
Good stuff. Listen, Connor, thanks very much for all those insights into the business. Great to have a chat with you at the start of what sounds like a blistering career. So we wish you all the best and we'll definitely be keeping in touch.
No bother. Thank you very much for having a chat.
I really enjoyed my chat there with Connor. It was great to get some insights into his career and what's happening in the machinery industry overseas. Well, that's it for this week's Young Stock Podcast, folks. Thanks for listening.
We're currently looking for young people across Ireland to interview on the podcast. If you know someone who's under the age of 35 that has an interesting story, career, or experience that you want to share, then send on their name and get in touch with the Young Farmers Journal team. We want to give a voice to young people across rural Ireland. What issues are currently bothering you? Get in touch by emailing youngstock@farmersjournal.ie or send us a WhatsApp voice note to 086 83 66465.